This is a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Open for business on BFM 89.9.
BFM 89.9, good morning and welcome to Open for Business, the show that dives into the journeys and ventures of entrepreneurs and business leaders. This morning on the show, we've got Peter Yong, co-founder and CEO of FinLit Media Tech Group. You might be more familiar with one of his more prominent works, Mr. Money TV. Yes, we've got Mr. Money TV in the house this morning. Now, after leaving a lucrative career selling insurance policies, Peter took a leap into the world of new media back towards the end of 2018, early 2019, and started Mr. Money TV. The mission? To demystify the complex world of finance for the average Malaysian through accessible and engaging content. However, this move was of course not without its risks, as business is. From the early days of balancing multiple jobs to keep the venture alive, to their now 177,000 subscribers on the main YouTube channel, today on Open for Business, we explore the inception and growth of FinLit Media Tech Group and Mr. Money TV, along with Peter's ambitions for the future and appetite to build a new media network. On top of this, we'll dive into how he's managing the ever-evolving new media landscape while trying to create a sustainable business model. Peter, welcome to the studio. It's about time.
Hello. Hi, Roshan. Thank you very much for having me here.
Now, Peter, I've covered some of the key bases there in the introduction. But the key thing here to remember is that before you started Mr. Money TV, you were in insurance and you were making good money. I think
That's right.
I think you told Ling Yao on her podcast, it was like something around $250,000 a year. And this was before you started this business. So why leave that and start FinLit Media and Mr. Money TV?
I think, to put it simply, it's probably a quarter-life crisis, right?
That probably explains a lot.
Yeah. When I first started selling insurance, I had the idea that I need to make a certain amount of money in order to sustain. I mean, no one starts by thinking, I want to be an insurance agent, right? Mm-hmm. You just needed to make that money. And when I hit that that income target that I wanted, I started considering, what do I really want to do in life? And during that point, I realized that I really enjoyed the fact of educating people, helping people get the aha when it comes to money, when it comes to life. But one thing that I did not really like was that I have to keep selling, right? And that's the nature of the job of an insurance agent. You have to keep selling because it's commission-driven, right? Even if you're not selling something in commission, you need to get fees on advice or whatnot. And all this involves selling. And that's the part that I didn't quite like to do for the rest of my life. So I thought to myself, like, is there anything that I can do that doesn't require me to sell, but allows me to inspire people? And I recall at the moment, my brother-in-law came to me. He's in the fintech company. And he started telling me about how the country is trying to reduce middlemen. Mm. And that's a trend that we see in many other countries, right? But we're not saying the agents will be reduced at the end of the day or they're going to go away. They still have a big part to play in the whole ecosystem, right? But things are changing. And at that moment, I thought to myself, like, hey, what if I'm going to venture into this? What can I do? Yeah, and at that point, I came up with some big ideas where I wanted to build a financial product, and stuff like that. And after sitting down and assessing my viability, I realized that, oh man, I do not know how to code.
Yeah.
And to learn how to code is going to be difficult. So I thought, maybe just throwing up some videos is the best way to start. And that's how the whole journey began.
Well, it's been 5 years, and I'll ask you later whether building a financial product is still in the offing there. But for now, so you looked at content and media, and this is a very scalable business given the distribution channels that we have today. Obviously, there's a bit of personality risk that comes with it because you're building it around you, Peter Yong, or AKA Mr. Money. But we'll get into all those later. Why specifically new media then, right? What was it that drew you to this? And did you have any prior experience with it that, led you down this path?
So during my uni days, I used to edit some videos for my friends and I used to shoot some photos for people's wedding and stuff like that when I was getting into DSLR.
Some experience,
but not enough to actually start your own media company. So to put it simple enough, why YouTube was the thing or new media was the thing is because it was low cost. I just needed my phone. I just needed to put things up online. And that moment, I recall Facebook started allowing the embedment of a YouTube link. Yeah, and it allowed that whole preview thing. Yeah, it was revolutionary at that point when digital was still ancient dinosaur during back then, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, so that kind of changed the game and made me realize that, hey, maybe I don't really need to get into a new station or something like that. I don't need a lot of cost. Just by doing that, that could happen, because we're already seeing in other countries like US and so on, people are already starting to make money being an influencer. Mm-hmm. It was like the new thing at the time. So it just came to my mind, this is probably the most costless way to do it. Let's just get it started.
Now, given the inherent risk that comes with going into business, Peter, and I think if I understand this correctly, you also had a newborn child at that point, right? Your first your first child. What gave you the confidence to embark on this? It's not a decision that comes without, as I mentioned, risk.
Yeah, that's why I say this is the part where it's a bit of a quarter-life crisis, right? I mean, things were pretty good. My wife wasn't working. In order to do this full-time, I actually told my wife, like, hey, you probably have to get back out to work, right? Yeah, because the risk is too high right now. And I still recall at that time also I had some credit card debts because I just got married and I started a venture before that and it did not work out.
Right, so not your first rodeo.
Yeah, it's not my first rodeo. And what gave me the confidence, honestly, there were a few things. Firstly, there was still some income coming in from the insurance side because I was doing quite well. So there was some residual income keep coming in.
Because commissions come after for a few years, correct?
Yes, for about 5 years, yeah. And during that time as well, I had a few people who actually asked me if I want to join them in their business. That kind of gave me a little bit of confidence on my ability to run a business. And finally was the fact that just looking at the trend all around the world, I knew that I kind of have the confidence that this is going to happen. Mm-hmm. But it's just a question of whether am I willing to put in the work and whether can I find the right niche and the right product market fit. So I thought to myself, the only thing that's left there is just the time to work on it. So you got to fill up that little missing puzzle to get your answer, right?
So it's been 5 years then. You mentioned product market fit there. At what point did you, in your journey, did you realize that, all right, this is going to work, not just Mr. Money TV, but this idea of FinLit Media Tech Group, this is going to work. Do you remember that moment?
Oh, I would say that over the years, this came in many different moments. Mm. I recall when the first time when I had that was, I was renting a hot space in Common Ground, yeah? And I recall I started telling some of the banks as they approached me, they came to my event and I mean, they didn't came in the bank's capacity. They were just viewers and they came. I said, hey, I love what you do, right? Then I said, hey, you know, what if you were to sponsor me to educate my audience, right? And he said, yeah, I can consider that. Then he went back and in there he wrote me a check to...
Wow.
Yeah, their company wrote me a check to actually organize an education event. Unfortunately, after that, COVID happened.
Right.
Yeah. So the whole event was suspended halfway. But they did not ask back for the money.
Mm.
The money was still with us. And we still continue the whole thing in other forms. Yeah. And that was the first moment that I realized that the media part would work.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Subsequently, when I knew that it can be a group of business was when my next few clients, after 1-2 years later, who came to me, became bigger and bigger.
Mm-hmm.
And they started looking at other people as well. So there during that time, we see other financial influencers started coming up and we see them started using other influencers that are not finance to talk about finance. And so it tells me that the market is looking for something, but there's a gap there. Yeah. So that kind of gave me the idea. And even later when there were government agencies who actually started working with us and partnering with us to get their messages out. So that was the part. And finally, the next thing that got me really, really to really believe that there is a product market fit was the fact that when we actually work with our partners, we can see their conversion rates actually went up significantly. Yeah. So that tells me that, hey, this whole education thing kind of plays a strong role in product itself. Yeah, and that gave us that confidence.
Without naming names, of course, give us a sense for what kind of clients were these? Were these fund managers? Were these investment products? Were they insurance products? Were they credit card products?
Most of them will be financial institutions. Okay. Yeah, they are definitely insurance one. They are definitely big banks. they are definitely a government-related agency that has to do with the benefits of the people.
All right. Peter, we got to go into a few messages, speaking of clients, of course. and now when we come back, we'll talk a little bit about some of the key lessons you've learned over the last 5 years, as well as some of the key challenges along the way. Of course, a lot more to get into beyond just that. Folks, I've been speaking with Peter Yong. He's the co-founder and CEO of Finlit Media Tech Group, the company that owns Mr. Money TV, the brand that I think a lot of us are familiar with. I'm Roshan Gunnison, not you. I'm Roshan Gunnison. You're listening to Open for Business. We'll be back in just a bit, so keep it here to BFM 89.9, the business station.
Balanced Frank Medium, BFM 89.9.
BFM 89.9, welcome back to Open for Business. I'm Roshan Gunnison, and this morning I'm speaking with Peter Yong, co-founder and CEO of Finlit Media Tech Group, the owners and operators of the Mr. Money TV brand. Peter, earlier we got a sense for what led you into this world, right? And you jokingly, of course, call it a quarter-life crisis at the point, because you were making good money back in the insurance business and you transitioned over to media. You didn't like the selling part as much, and you wanted to see how you could educate more people. Over the years, I think when you got your first client, the first check that came from a financial institution is when it really showed you that, all right, this might work. Going back to some of the early days there, right? So you start this in late 2018, early 2019. I think you've got your co-founder, CK, as well. Talk to us about, you know, how you and CK came together and what did the outfit look like at the start, right? Where were you working from? What cameras were you using? These are all the things that, you know, sometimes we like, oh, did you go out and spend money or did you start simple?
Well, I remember in the early days, I didn't have my own office, right? So what happened was that my ex insurance manager is the one who inspired me to do this. He was telling me, hey, maybe you should do this to get more business. Yeah, so that time we were having our failing venture. So we were still at a few months in that office there. So I started recording in the office. All I had was my phone. Yeah, and I went and buy a simple Boya mic, you know, so it was like $20 or something like that. I can't recall. Yeah, and just I had a tripod stand that was left over from my last time that I just used it, bought a phone clip, you know, started recording it. It took me about 4 days to record one video because you know how you hear yourself first time on screen, right? You really find that so odd and you see your own picture there, you're like, oh, so ugly, right? Yeah, I went through that as well. I recall during that time, I started moving when the office lease ended. We went to a friend's office where we used his office to do other work, right? So on the weekends. And it was during that time that I met CK again. He was an intern in the insurance office back then when he was 18 years old. I was like in the early of my insurance career. And he just graduated. So when he came, he was like, hey, I saw one of your videos and I thought it was like really good because he and I had shared the same background. So both of us were from urban poor family. My dad was a bankruptcy. We learned the value of money in the quite a young age, and we had to struggle to find our own way to make it in this world, right? And he was the same. I recall during that time he said like, hey, things were great, you know, your content is good, but I thought your video can be improved. You know what, I enjoy that part, why not let me help you? And I thought to myself, like, hey, these young chiku, say these kind of things, right? You never know, you know, whether will they really do it, right? So I thought, you know what? Since you're so interested in this, why not just come in every morning at 8 o'clock? I'm going to be here for breakfast and start recording. Just come in at 8 o'clock. I'll buy you breakfast and we'll work on it. And from that day on, he came at 8 o'clock every day.
Wow.
Every day. Yeah. He did not ask me for a salary. He did not ask me for anything. He just came and he just helped. And after about close to a month, I asked him, actually, what do you want to do? You know, and what are your thoughts about it? So he started asking me, what do I really want? So I pitched him that whole idea. I recall telling him that we are starting off as an influencer in the market, but that's not the point. The point is to build a whole media empire that can change the landscape of Malaysia's financial literacy. Right. And he bought into that idea and I asked him, hey, so but I can't pay your salary. Why not you be a co-founder, man? here's a 30% share of worth nothing at this point.
Here's 30% of nothing, but you know, come on board, you can now call yourself a co-founder.
Yes. And he was like, he was considering it for a while, and eventually he accepted the offer. for the logic, he always tell me this, is the story that I told him that the worst that can happen to you is you tried to start a business. Mm. The best thing that can happen to you is this 30% becomes something, mm-hmm. right? And he bought into it, and that's how I got together with him.
You know, you mentioned something there in terms of the commonalities between you and CK was that you're both from urban poor backgrounds. Peter, tell me a little bit about how that informed, I guess, the way you went about building MMTV and Finlit, right? Was there a particular did this inform why you're so focused on financial literacy?
Yeah. So, because when I was young, my dad was poor, dirt poor, right? Mm. My mom used to tell a story of how I failed in business, how things are really, really tough. Mm. I came to PJ to study later, and I realized that most of the PJ guys are upper middle, you know? Most of our friends who are normal, not rich, are people who can afford to go to UK and study, right? Mm-hmm. And I used to ask myself, like, hey, why is this so unfair? You know, these guys have the choice to do what they want. You know, they are successful because their family are rich. They have the support, they have the resource. This is what I always tell myself. You know, that jealousy towards the rich was always there within me for a very, very long period of time. And when I went to the uni, I think things started changing. One of the books that I read that changed the way I thought was Rich Dad, Poor Dad, right? The classic book.
Robert Kiyosaki. Yeah.
And that got me thinking, like, hey, is it really resources that made them who they are, or is it money? And eventually I came to an idea that, you know, if you just change the way you think, you just understand money better, you just look at things in a more rational way and learn how to think like them, there is a chance that you can be like them or even better than them, right? And that was the mindset that I adopted, and that got me to do well in my insurance career. And later when I started this, I just felt like, if more people were to be able to change their mindset on money and to be able to understand what money is, then they stand a better chance to change their life. It's better than giving them anything else. Yeah.
Now, this is so interesting, right? Because you mentioned that your mom told you your dad had business ventures and those failed. On this side here, you went out and built a business venture. You would think that, you know, that kind of baggage would have made you a bit hesitant. Did you have to deal with any hesitance when you started, or, you know, did it not even factor?
Because the first time when I came out and do something that is without salary was insurance.
Yeah.
So that was already one thing. It was definitely tough. Mm. Yeah, your mom would be very worried. but I think aside from all that, it's more importantly to actually know who you are. Mm. Like, I know myself. Mm. I find it really hard to work for people. After my first corporate job, I realized that I can't work for people. Yeah. And I knew what I wanted, which was, I knew that I need to have about 15,000 to 20,000 to live in PJ, to support a family. So I knew I need to get there fast. Mm. That's all. Right. And when I started this business, then it became different again, because that was like, you're alone, right? There's no such thing as headcount, no nothing. You know, you're just a commissioned salesperson. But right now, starting your own business, the perspective change again. You start to realize that, yeah, there's a lot more risk. Mm. You can be driving an Activa, but you can be paying 100 over 1,000 headcount, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And does it scare you? It does. But you just keep telling yourself, right? Ultimately, all these are just emotions. Yeah, you have to put emotions aside. Just like what you learn about money ultimately is put emotions aside. Mm-mm. Find out what you truly want and find out a logical way of getting there. Yeah.
On that note, tell us a little bit, tell us some key lessons you've learned in the last 5 years of this particular chapter of your life.
I have to say one has remained. The first one is always talk to yourself.
Okay.
I talk to myself a lot. I have a lot of self-talk, from good ones to bad ones, but definitely a lot more good ones. Mm. I cycle myself a lot, yeah. Because I think that in order to run a business, you got to be a little bit insane.
It does seem like, based on a lot of the people I've spoken to, you have to have a little bit of that craziness about you to go out and do something, right? Because if you just did the math, you wouldn't do it. That's right. You have to believe that you're going to go against the grain and be that survivor in amongst in that graveyard of other businesses.
That's right. Yeah. So with that in mind, that leads to the second thing, right? Which is you gotta be very optimistic, but not naive. This one is very, very important. Because you gotta have such a good outlook of things, right? You gotta really believe that you can make it. But you must not be naive in the sense where if your idea is not logical and you don't have a product market fit, and then you are thinking that, oh, no, it can happen. No, that's not gonna work. There's a huge difference between being positive and being naive. That's something that you gotta learn to differentiate. And I think the third thing is to balance between trust and cautiousness. Yeah. So this has been a learning until today. Yeah, I tend to trust people quite easily. Yeah, and I try to look at people on the good side of things most of the time. Mm. That has got me to land some very good partnerships, very good employees, but that has also got me into trouble.
Yeah.
Yeah. So until today, that is the third thing that I try to be very careful about. And towards that is I realized the fact that these days, you are a little bit bigger than last time, so you don't have to just give the trust away. You should let other people earn that trust. Yeah.
Peter, more to get into, but first we got to go into the news bulletin, of course. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit about what goes into building out new products and concepts, right? Because it's no longer just Mr. Money TV on the roster here at FinLit Media Tech Group. Folks, I'm speaking with Peter Yong, co-founder and CEO of FinLit Media Tech Group, the owner and operator of Mr. Money TV, the new media brand, but also others. I'm Roshan Kanasin. When we come back, more to get into, so keep it here to BFM 89.9, the business station.
Baba from Malacca, BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, welcome back to Open for Business. I'm Roshan Kanasin, and this morning I'm speaking with Peter Yong, co-founder and CEO of FinLit Media Tech Group, a financial literacy media brand that owns and operates Mr. Money TV, among other brands. Peter, we've gotten a sense for the quarter life crisis that led to you leaving your insurance business and getting into the new media game. Some of the lessons you've learned, some of the milestones along the way. Now, you're no longer just a one-man show anymore, and I mean that literally. Yep. It's no longer just Mr. Money TV. You've got Frankie's FAQ show. You've also got a former deputy minister on the roster as well. Ong Kian Ming is doing the Are We OK podcast with you, which is more politically inclined. Frankie's FAQ show is more public markets focused. So you've no longer just about personal finance anymore as well. So talk to us about why this expansion beyond personal finance, which early on was really your bread and butter.
Yeah. So as you were mentioning, the biggest thing about this business is the personality risk, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's all about my face. And if you notice that I started off with the name itself, Mr. Money, the whole reason is so that it doesn't become too much of a Peter Yong. Yeah, although there's Peter Yong in it, the DNA is there, right?
But also, the logo kind of looks like you also.
Yeah, the logo kind of looks like me, right? Yeah, that's a whole thing. But if you notice, even our IG, it's less of me these days. Yeah. And so having multiple brands, it's kind of like, I think it's the same thing like BFM, right? Mm. Having multiple shows, having multiple segments with different kind of hosts, right? All the works to serve a specific target group of audience. Yeah, for a specific target group of things, right? Purpose. Yeah, and in my case, I believe that ultimately, in order to be smart with money, it's not just about understanding dollar and cents, but rather to look at the overall environment and understanding the opportunities and challenges around it and position yourself correctly. Yeah, so that's why there's that show with Kian Ming, right, for more political related, more policy related. Yeah, that's why there's that part with Frankie, where it is much more about public markets, where it's more investment concerned, and Mr. Money is more general. And also one of the brands that currently we are working with a lot and soon to be a part of the whole family will be the Coffee Break, where it's daily news, right? Yeah, and later we'll be building a property show as well. Yeah, so currently that's in progress, yeah, where we're going to talk about how to invest in property, but more of the angle of how to purchase a property that is more suitable for your living. Yeah.
Now, with all of this, right, I'm sure there's so many things you want to do, but you are limited by time and bandwidth end of the day. So there's always going to be an opportunity cost. If you do RBOK, maybe you can't do something else right now. Like, so you've had to delay property show, for example, on your end. With all that in mind, what goes into the strategy or the thinking behind essentially greenlighting a new show that comes to your platform?
Okay. For me, when I build a new show, the number one thing is that, does it require my face? Yeah. You'll get 100% yes or 99% yes where it doesn't require my face.
Okay.
Yeah, that's why there's a FAQ show. And if you notice that even ROK, I'm not the main guy leading it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and later when we are looking at the property show and whatnot, it shouldn't be being me as the main face, right? I can be there for a while to push up the name and help to cross-promote, but I should meet the guy, right? Number two is, what does this particular channel stand for? It should stand for something significant where it helps to improve lives. Because ultimately, our motto of the company comes down to this one thing. Are we bringing knowledge that can transform lives? So if we fulfill that, then that makes sense. Yeah, if that is not fulfilled, then that's not a channel we want to build.
And when it comes to the monetizability of these shows, is that something that you consider as well? Or is that something for later, to deal with at a later time?
So that is already conceived at the beginning, usually. I always tell people that I don't think charity is sustainable. I mean, I want to live a good life as well, right? Yeah. But I think that it's more important to see your business, like in our case, actually, we see ourselves as a social business, but we just don't advertise ourselves as one. The reason being is because we want to make profit behind it. Yeah, and we believe that the profit should be shared so that everyone win together. Yeah.
Because you've been open about this internally within your staff. You have a profit sharing model as well. Everyone kind of knows how much money is coming in so that everyone is accountable. I guess you can see your impact, right, towards revenue growth and profitability of the business. Was that a talent retention strategy, or was that just like from the get-go you wanted to be open and honest about what you were doing?
It's both. Some people wonder why I do certain things, but I'll just share that. Actually, I'm not a very good liar. And I'm not very good at hiding my intentions. I'm quite an open book, actually. So I realized that the best way to actually build a good company, organization, or culture, right, it's by being yourself, truly being yourself. And that means that sometimes I need to be extremely honest about things. That's just because my character is like that. I'm not very good in hiding my intentions. So let's make the best of it. So since I'm not very good at hiding it, and at the same time, it also works out well as a talent management strategy, then let's go for it. It's a retention thing. We also tell our staff up front, like, if let's say you need more people to help you with editing because you don't think you can do the job, great, I'm going to hire because it gets the job done. But do remember, it impacts the bottom line, right? So your bonus could be affected. So you have to justify in between there. You have to figure it out yourself. So that way, everyone owns a part of a company.
It's also a little bit of an entrepreneurial mindset that you're bringing into everybody there.
Yeah. Ultimately, also, because the company is all about financial literacy, right? And so it's for you to understand financial literacy, to apply it within the business. And I always tell my staff this, right? What makes you a good staff is not just your ability to complete your work, but to be able to understand what you do. Can it affect the bottom line? And when you have that kind of knowledge, whichever company you go, you will likely have a good career progression. And so it may come a day where you find that the package here may not be that suitable for you. You have a better offer and you want to move on. I will be happy for you, and I'll even gladly write you a good referral letter.
Now, the big wave, of course, that has hit podcast world has been Kyrie and Cheryl's Keluar Sekejap. It has really shaken things up. It seems that advertisers, given how they're monetizing seemingly monetizing the platform based on the ads they're getting, has been doing quite well. As someone who's in the podcasting space, or the vodcasting space specifically, tell us a little bit about how Keluar Sekejap has changed things for podcasting from your perspective, because Are We Okay, the more politically inclined show on your network, also came in after Keluar Sekejap.
So I think when Keluar Sekejap came out, what happened was that people used to look at policy-related or or a politics-related subject as a taboo for advertisers, right? No advertisers will ever want to associate with that. But what KJ did, what KS did, right, literally was making it mainstream, man. Like, suddenly, brands are not afraid to be associated with a policy-related or politics-related content. And on top of that, they made the whole policy and politics scene like a mainstream drama, right? It feels almost like a Friends episode that you're going to catch up the next week, right? Yeah. Yeah, after a while, you get a bit fatigued, but when there's news comes up, it reminds you again and you go back to it. And I think that is where the magic is. That's where the magic is. And that's what they did for the industry as a whole. And so, although they were the latecomers, but once they did it because of the star power and everything else and the quality of the content itself, it really did lead to a whole change in the whole podcast space from what I've seen.
And how have you changed or responded to that change in the back end?
So for me, that's why there was Are We Okay? Mm-hmm. Because from what we have seen at the point was that, hey, there's a Malay medium podcast related to policy, but there's a lack of an English medium one. So I took the opportunity and I invited Kian Ming to actually join the show because I thought to myself, when I looked at the quality of KS, I knew that there's no journalist who can do that. It is people within the game who actually understand how it goes that can ask that kind of question and can lead it in that way. I'll be honest, right? Even when I had that conversation with Kian Ming in the first two episodes where he was allowing me to lead more, it wasn't that great. Mm-hmm. When I took the back seat and say, hey, why not you lead it? I be that ignorant citizen to just ask questions. I thought the show became much more fantastic because he knows exactly what to ask, where to push the lines, and what really relates. And my job was just to translate it a little bit lower down to how it affects your pocket.
Correct. So your specialty, or even on our end here at BFM, it's breaking that down for the audience to better understand. But you want the subject matter experts
to be
the ones who are really bringing out the insights
and
driving conversation, right? So that's been very interesting. And I guess that's what's so interesting about KS as well, is that you've got two former politicians, or currently former politicians for now, Tuas Kajak Unikan, who are kind of giving you this insight into the political machinations. And it's been quite fun, if I'm being honest. Peter, I do want to talk about the business side of things. Of course, we've talked a lot about the journey and the rationale and the conceptualization. In a little bit after the break, we're going to talk about the money side of things. Folks, I've been speaking with Peter Yong, co-founder and CEO of FinLit Media Tech Group, a financial literacy media brand that owns the Mr. Money TV brand. I'm Roshan Kennison. You're listening to Open for Business. We'll be back in just a bit. So keep it here to BFM 89.9, the business station.
Banish feudal mentality. BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, welcome back to Open for Business. I'm Roshan Kanison, and this morning I'm speaking with Peter Yong, co-founder and CEO of FinLit Media Tech Group, a financial literacy media brand that owns the Mr. Money TV brand. Peter, earlier we've talked far and wide about why you got into this business, the challenges that came along the way, and what you've built today, as well as how you stumbled upon CK came together in the early days and co-founded this business. A big part, I guess, is also people are going to wonder, you gave up a lucrative career in insurance agency business to do this. And I'm sure you didn't do it to make less money over time. You now have been doing this for just over 5 years or about 5 years.
Yeah.
Where is the business today in terms of revenue generation? What can you tell us about that?
The company has been growing significantly. We started in our first year making about 40,000. Yeah, subsequently, it has been a great ride. Today, we are close to 2 million in revenue. Yeah,
annual revenue.
Yes. Yeah. And the company has been growing at the rate of 100% or more a year. So it's been great. It's been a great journey. Yeah, but coming together with that also, as the business expands, we are in that position where we are wondering how far should we expand. And how much more cost should we actually reinvest back into the business?
Yeah. Right, because you know you've got that dilemma, right? You've got this money, you've got a margin. I'm sure the business is currently profitable?
Yes.
So you're building a profitable business here. How much do you then plow back into the business to continue growing?
Yes.
But before we get into that, in terms of the revenue mix there, is it mostly advertising and sponsorship?
I would say that most of it is advertising and sponsorship. Yeah. So very little come from AdSense. A lot of people thought that AdSense will make you a lot of money,
but actually no, man. CPMs in this region are not great.
Yeah, not in this region is not great. Unless you're in Singapore, that's a good money for AdSense. Yeah, not here. Yeah.
So you've got to go and monetize it on your own. Correct?
That's right.
So with external advertisers, sponsors for shows, things like that. Mm. So like that first check you told us about earlier, that was for an event.
Yes, that's right.
How much do events factor into your business?
Very little these days. Mm. We pick and choose the kind of business that we do. Yeah.
Now, what are your... So you're currently at about a 2 million annual revenue rate. You're making about 2 million a year. Do you have a growth target for this year based on... Are you expecting 100% growth this year as well?
Anything less than that is unacceptable to us.
So the growth is 4 million this year, at least.
Yeah, there's that expectation set in, lah. Yeah.
And what do you see driving the 100% growth that you're expecting this year?
I think that the number of channels is one. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Number two, actually, even without the channel, we can see that probably happening. Yeah. But to have more channels is about diversifying the risk. Mm. Yeah. And number two is that I think the appetite for advertisers is getting more and more. I think in terms of financial... independent financial channel kind of marketing, it's just about to get started. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, and we all know that the market is currently at this place where the upcycle is starting to happen. Mm-hmm. So I guess with the prediction of a better economy and also appetite from consumers, yeah, that would drive the marketing budget.
And are you seeing marketing budgets being more open to podcasting and vodcasting following Klaus Kajab's rise?
Yes. Yes, and definitely.
So conversations are... Because before this, the struggle was, I guess, that you'd have marketing budgets be for... Here's for billboards, for TV, for radio. And you need to fight for that piece of that pie right now. Are you seeing... carve out specifically for your industry?
Yes. Yeah, I do see that. Yeah. Actually, in fact, I have to say we started a business at the right place, right time, with the right people as well. So we have not, I'll be honest, we have not done outbound sales.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So it's all been coming in for you.
Yep.
You've built this platform, you've built this brand, you've got new shows coming into it. But would it be correct to assume that Mr. Money TV is that brand, is the main revenue driver?
At this point, yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But we are starting to see more and more coming in for other stuff as well. Yeah, other brands.
Do you see the other shows in the portfolio bringing in time? Is the target for them to be equal revenue drivers, or will it be natural for Mr. Money TV to still have a bigger portion of the revenue driving?
Like they always say, right? It's not a great business if it's only dependent on you, right?
Mm.
So the idea is that in the next few years,
all of them should be carrying
that weight. When you ever interview anyone from us, you will be saying that Philip Media, who owns a number of these brands, not just Mr. Money.
Portfolio of new media assets.
That's right, yeah.
So next time we have you on, we'll reshuffle that a little bit. So you mentioned earlier that the business is profitable. Can you tell us how profitable the business is?
Maybe I'll keep that to myself. But yeah, I think whoever that's in a media business will kind of know the margins.
Yeah. Are we talking about... Yeah, okay, fine. We won't dive too deep into that. But margins enough, but double-digit margins?
Definitely.
Mid-double-digit.
Yeah. I would say that a healthy media company usually, especially if you're a media owner, I think just like BFM and anyone else, right? You're looking at about 20-30% at least.
Yeah,
right?
And talent will be the key cost factor in developing any kind of content, right? So right now, you haven't really been super reinvesting in the business to churn out a whole bunch of content. Yeah. You've been focusing on one primary channel and with new ones coming in.
So we have been very lean for the longest of time, right? Even until last year end, we only had like... 3 staff and 3 business partners, me, myself, me, Frankie, and CK, the co-founder, right? So And then we had 3 staff. That's all, right? Only in this year, we started to ramp up our hiring.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And recently, we started hiring professional managers to come in to actually run the business. Yeah. So I think as a founder, there's one place that you have to come to, which is to know where your strength ends
mm-hmm.
and where you should start handing on certain rein. I'm not saying that I'm fully handing on my rein to someone, but there are certain skill set in the media side where as it becomes bigger, it is no more a content creator business anymore. Yeah. Where you need to start figuring out, like, for certain parts, do you actually have a proper chief strategy person to actually work it out? And so we are at that position right now.
And as you build a portfolio of media assets, there is this narrative that you need a media network in order for this to be truly scalable and to really power advertising in the longer run, because you could a lot more surface area to put those ads in. Is that a key area for growth for you in the long run?
Definitely, yeah. Because I guess
only internally built brands, or are you looking at partners and other content creators out there?
So we are also looking at partners and other content creators. Yeah, but we are again quite selective.
Mm. What criteria are you watching in particular? Because you remember the North Star earlier, it's about how you add value to people, right, in their lives.
Yeah.
It's a bit of a wide North Star. Are you looking at personal development folks? Are you looking at only about economy and money?
As long as you believe that your content will create an impact, that's number one. So it can be in any form, right? Yeah, I mean, it can't be so far off that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like, yeah, I can't be too far off. But I think more importantly is character of people. I believe in working with people that are really honest, people who are upfront about their intentions, who are honest, who are willing to work. These are the 3 things that I really, really look for. Yeah, so there are certain people that when I work with them, I feel comfortable. Mm. Then we start to invite them more into the inner circle and be a part of the whole family of brands.
It's a process.
Yeah.
Are you looking to, because you're hiring more people, yes, you've got some profits there, but in order to grow much faster, are you looking to raise external funding?
That will be something in the pipeline, yeah. Because the company is profitable, we don't really need the money to grow yet, yeah, because we can self-fund it. But coming from a financial literacy background, right, we tend to be more careful as well. So we always want to have a certain amount of buffer. Yeah, and if let's say we're going to grow aggressively moving ahead, then definitely we'll need some funding. But at this point, we are not in a rush for that.
Not just yet, lah.
Yeah.
Now, to wrap up this conversation, when we see media companies being built, some of us will look back to Sis.com and how they were eventually acquired, right? But you also got media companies who go public, and you also have media companies that stay private, like BFM ourselves here. What do you see as the preferred route for yourself?
At this point, I can't really tell yet.
Mm.
Yeah, I think for me, I'm still very obsessed with the idea of building something first that's significant enough, yeah, that really make a change in the wider community. Yeah, once that's done, then yeah, that will be the question. Here and there are some offers. There are some people who have been offering us, talking to us, but we have not really entertained it. Yeah,
what does that final product look like to you then? Because once we are done, what does that look like to you?
Like I say, the North Star is actually knowledge that can transform lives, right?
Mm.
I feel like we are at that position where we have that knowledge that encourage people to do life-transforming decisions.
Mm.
But we do not yet have that platform or that actual leading from there to seeing through with the results, right? So that could be encapsulated in the form of a product, maybe a tech product, or a platform, yeah, but that is still in the development process.
And something I'm sure we'll get into at a future conversation. Peter, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you very much.
Folks, I've been speaking with Peter Yong, co-founder and CEO of Finlit Media Tech Group, a financial literacy media brand that owns the Mr. Money brand. And if you missed any part of this conversation, you can catch the podcast on the BFM app or wherever you get your podcasts. Just look up for Open for Business. I'm Roshan Kanesan. You've been listening to Open for Business here on BFM 89.9, the business station.
You've been listening to Open for Business on BFM 89.9.
You have been listening to a podcast from BFM 89.9. The Business Station. For more stories of the same kind, download the BFM app.